Hello, good evening, and welcome to Film Storytelling, the Magic of Visual Effects with Action Cut. We've got Guy Magger, who's an entertainment industry veteran, a director, producer, writer. He's directed over 60 television episodes, including all sorts of TV shows from Nowhere Man, Hunter, The A-Team, Sliders, just a fantastic resume with over... just dozens and dozens of TV shows, and then five feature films, including Children of the Corn, Revelation, which he did for Miramax Dimension, Showdown, which starred Matt LeBlanc with TV's Friends, Stepfather, which he did for HBO, and just a really absolutely spectacular career, and just passionate about filmmaking and the art and craft and business of film, and founded Action Cut to mentor up-and-coming and emerging filmmakers and writers and actors and on the craft and the business. And I'm Philippa Burgess. I'm an entertainment professional with Creative Convergence, and my background sort of working at IBM and then into management. And I love helping other entertainment resources because I know that there's a knowledge gap in working with artists between the time they're sort of breaking in, the time they sort of have a career to manage and are working sort of within the studio system and across film and television. And so I'm just a huge fan of what Guy is doing, and so happy to sort of be able to sort of participate in this and welcome him this evening. Guy, are you on the call?
Yes, I am. Hello, Philippa, and thanks for the intro.
Hey.
And hello to everyone out there.
So welcome. So film storytelling, I mean, you've obviously had just such a fantastic career with this, but you know that there's a knowledge gap and there's quite a lot to learn to really make something really work.
It is, and it's an incredible craft. I've been at it for a bunch of years, and you got to be in love with what you're doing, and I hope everyone out there listening, whatever you're doing, whether you're an actor, a producer, writer, or a director, or a photographer, or anything else that's out there, you got to be in love with what you're doing. I think it's an extremely passionate career, and everyone has their own journey. And what fuels the journey is the passion, and to be able to make films. And in my case, I wanted to become a director in television and features when I started out, and forged a career in television, did a lot of the shows that you'd mentioned, and moved on to features, and I go back and forth between the two. And what's great about visual filmmaking is basically, the tools, there's someone in the industry who said, for example, that all a painter needs is a brush and all a writer needs is a pen, and what a director needs is an army. And actually, it was Orson Welles who said that. And it takes an army to make a film, even a small film. You really need to work with a lot of people in a collaborative effort. And the whole idea is to make the most exciting film that you possibly can, whether you're making a 5-minute short or a feature film or a documentary or anything else that goes in front of a camera. And it's all about visual storytelling. It starts on the page and it moves on the set. And the keys to a director to tell his story is the camera. And one of the first things we do at the Action Cut Seminar is talk about the tools. And the tools are the cameras and the lenses and the filters. And we talk about the usage of these tools, just like a painter using different brushes to paint his painting. A director will use his camera and all the little things that go on with it. Even if you haven't taken a camera class in less than an hour at the Action Cut Seminar, I usually bring people up to date with all the basic tools that you need to tell your story. And from there, it's all about imagination. And what's wonderful is that, and I say that again at the seminars, that if you give a 3-page script to everyone sitting there and you send them out with a camera and you tell them to come back in 5 hours with a film, you're going to give us 40 people in the room, you're going to get 40 different films, and that's what's great about filmmaking, and that's what it still turns me on to this day because it's an incredibly subjective passion, and everyone can read those pages and have their own interpretation of it and translate it to the visual story that they want. Some people could do all 3 pages in one shot. Some people could come up with 5 shots. Some people could come up with 50 shots. And at the end of the day, that's what's exciting about visual storytelling. It's about people bringing to the table their ability to visualize a story using the film media.
One thing I wanted to ask you is talking about how mastering visual filmmaking, you know, can really take your career to another level. Like, how does one go about mastering it? What is the process where are the opportunities? I mean, obviously, you create an amazing opportunity for people with what you're doing with Action Cut, but sort of how is it that somebody can, you know, what are the elements that people need to master the art of visual storytelling?
Well, like everything else in film, it starts really with a screenplay. And I know there's a lot of writers listening. And, you know, we talked the last time a couple of weeks ago when we had a seminar about visual writing. Instead of going through it, what I would like to let everybody know as a writer, I think visual storytelling is incredibly important. I think you need to do a visual storytelling pass on your script along with your dialogue passes to be able to change the vocabulary so that the vocabulary can evoke a visual imagery of what you're talking about. And it's all in the usage of vocabulary so that your sentence, instead of being an exposition sentence, really becomes almost something that somebody can feel or see just by changing a couple of words in your sentence. And I suggest that everybody does that. If you want to really know a little more about it, this is actually on the Action Cut website. There is a page that I wrote for the Writer Store here in L.A., and you should all be getting their newsletter, by the way, which is free. But I wrote an e-zine for them. They have about 40,000 writers out there, and it's about visual writing. It's on the Action Cut website. So it really starts there. It starts on the page. And then you sit there as a director and you start figuring out, well, how am I going to take that and turn it into a film idea? Because remember, it could be a scene that doesn't have any dialogue, for example. And a scene, you're talking about mastering visualization. Well, here's a really good example. Let's say there's no scene of dialogue at all. And it's all about atmosphere, and it's all about mood. And, you know, I'll give you an example. A woman loses her husband after 20 years in a car accident. The next day she's walking on the beach. How do you visually interpret that? Well, let's talk about it. You know, there's great sadness. There's this great grief. She's alone for the first time in 20 years. She's feeling very lonely. She's feeling very small, very unimportant. She's lost. In the world, she has to go on her own. Well, what do you do to be able to convey that idea to an audience just from those words that are written on the page? And just a quickie and a very simple idea is, for example, to shoot her with a wide-angle lens. I'm sure most people know what a wide-angle lens is as opposed to a telephoto lens. Get the camera as far away as possible from her so that she's very, very small on the screen. And I don't have any extras walking on the beach to give her that feeling of extreme loneliness, of someone who's lost and who's in great grief at the moment and have a great sunset in the back. That's a visual interpretation of the few words that I just talked about that's on the page. Mastering filmmaking really is about experience. And the more you do it, the better you get at it. It's one of those things in life like everything else. You know, my first films were not very good. They were not very complex. They were not very deep. And with experience, even in television, when you're telling a television show, even if it's a weekly show that everybody knows about, for example, I did the La Femme Nikita series that was shot in Toronto. And even though there's a formula to it and that the writers and the producers want every week, you still can come in and bring your own visual interpretation of that story. And it comes really with doing it again and again and again. That's why I really encourage people to start with shorts, because it's a great place to start getting experience on a short idea, 5, 10, 15-minute idea, and be able to do that again and again and again. And I always tell people when they're done with their shorts, start the next one, because you're going to get better and better. I mean, just think, if you make 5 shorts, your fifth one will be so much better than your first or second, because you would have learned so much about where to put the camera and what would make this atmosphere work so well, and do I just hold it close up on her face when the tears start coming down, or do I do a circular track around her and end up on the guy's face who she's crying about. You know, what is the best way to handle that particular visual moment? And I think mastering filmmaking comes with experience.
No, and actually, it's sort of our business, which is when we sort of sell clients and looking to get them hired. It's really what we're selling is not just their talent, but we're really selling confidence in their ability to deliver, and that comes from the fact that they've tackled challenges before and they've been through it. So when stuff, you know, when they get thrown a curveball, you know that they're going to deliver, because that's really you know, in terms of the career development side of it. So
right.
Definitely. And that's actually, like I said, why I'm such a huge fan of what you're doing. And can you talk about it for a minute? Because you've got your fall tour coming up, and I know you're going to be sort of coast to coast. So what kind of stuff, I mean, at these seminars, it's pretty intensive and getting people some pretty hands-on experience, no matter where they're at in their sort of filmmaking experience.
Right.
They can really, and I guess it's twofold, because I'm not, from my point of view, because I'm, again, so much on the social career side of the business, coming at it from the point of view as a representative. You know, I'm always, you know, filmmakers or actors or writers sort of say, well, where do I get started? Or, you know, it's such a social business. And so these opportunities, I know, just first and foremost, you know, they meet just great community, and they just sort of get to sort of be among like-minded people. And I know, you know, so much, like everybody in the business, you work with your peers, you all kind of come up together.
Right.
And so I think you know, you've already create like a great community, but you're also kind of give real hands-on experience that. So do you want to talk more about like the upcoming seminar? And then
sure.
You've got John Grasso as a guest. And so we'll kind of, it's kind of a good lead in. So I think bring out, you know, talk about the seminars and the great offers we've got going on there, and then lead into our guest.
Okay. About 9 years ago, I started Action Cut, and I really started because I wanted to provide people in 2 days what I didn't get from having gone to 2 film schools, and I went to 2 great film schools, but I still didn't get what I really needed to be able to get into the industry and work on a professional level. And I thought about it for many, many years as I was working. What is it that I wish I had? Because it was a little rough for me in the beginning when I started out my first TV show, for example. And what I realized was that I didn't get somebody who sat down with me, like a director, with their work and being able to give me a scene that they directed, for example, and let me read the scene. And then talk about how are we going to visualize this particular scene from a director's point of view. Let's talk about the characters. What do they look like? Who do we get? What kind of casting do we do? What kind of wardrobe should they wear? The scene takes place in a restaurant. Well, what kind of restaurant do we want? Do we want a bright, sunny restaurant? Do we want a romantic one full of greens and flowers? Do we want... what is the mood that takes place in this particular scene that the writer wrote? And then what we do is talk about where are we going to place all the cameras, and I give them a shot list of how I did it. And remember, everybody does it different. And then we turn off the lights, and we actually show them the dailies. And one of the cool things was that when I was working, I knew someday I would end up teaching, and somehow my instincts told me to hang on to my dailies, which is usually things that are thrown away by directors. So I kept mine and was able, when I designed the seminar, now I can show those shots. So if you have 5 shots on your list, we're actually going to show you those 5 shots and the raw footage, including the slates, so that people really see and understand what's on the paper, how it's being translated to the screen. And after that, what we do is show them the finished product, the way it showed on TV or in the movie theaters after it was cut with music and put together. So the idea of a course is to be able to go from a page to the screen. And when you do that over and over and over again, doing different genres, how to open a movie, how to handle a large action group scene, how to handle a love scene, how to handle a one-shot scene. When you do all that for 2 days, 2 intensive days, when you leave, you are really armed with how to handle anything that comes to you on the page. And that's the whole idea of a seminar, is to be able to equip people with a methodology about how to handle anything they read and how to start visualizing it and breaking it down into making a film. And what I wanted to do is take that course across the country, and we've been doing it for about 9 years. I usually end up doing them in the fall and in the spring. I do them back-to-back so it doesn't get in the way of my other work, and I can go visit filmmakers and screenwriters like in New York and Florida and Chicago, and we've been to Dallas and Houston and places like that. It's been a lot of fun to be able to share this knowledge with everyone and meet people across the country. And we're doing it again in a couple of weeks. We're going to Fort Lauderdale and Chicago in October, and then we'll be in L.A. and New York in November.
That's awesome. And this is the first time that you're actually partnering with John Gress and bringing him into...
What's so great about that idea is I really started to realize how important visual effects is becoming. And usually in the old days, you know, visual effects was something that was very, very expensive, you know, for George Lucas boys that they would do for millions of dollars. But because visual effects has developed and there's a whole bunch of new programs that are very affordable to people, and it's really become a tool that even low-budget filmmakers can use to enhance their movies. Everyone who's listening, I recommend you go to the website and see the 2007 winners, for example, of the Action Cut Short Film Competition. Almost every single one of them, specifically the student film, which is about tornadoes, there's a music video of incredible visualization that was done almost completely with visual effects and green screen. And because of that, I thought, well, you know, it would be really great if I could team up with a specialist and give that knowledge also on the weekend. So both seminars are given. The Action Cut seminar is given on Saturdays and Sundays during the daytime, 9 hours a day. And then I thought to bring this visual effects seminar for Friday night and Saturday night. So people can actually take both seminars in one super film weekend. And I had met John Gress, who runs the Effects Institute in Florida. He's a visual effects designer, a director in his own right. And, you know, we decided to offer this together and travel together for the next few weeks and be able to give people a seminar experience between the two of us that is unique and has never been given before in one weekend. So I'd like to, John, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, John, welcome. Everyone's listening to you across the nation.
Hi, everyone.
And can you talk a little bit about the Effects Institute in Florida and also give us an idea of what you got in mind during the four weekends coming up?
Absolutely. The Effects Institute is actually relatively new, although I have been teaching this material for quite a few years, both on a graduate level as well as privately. But we decided to set up the Effects Institute as a place for a particular methodology of learning that's very similar to what Guy teaches in filmmaking. And for any of you out there who haven't already taken Guy's or seen Guy's course, the one thing that I can say that is I would say the thing that stands out the most in my mind from seeing his course multiple times is the passion level of what you're doing. And when you immerse yourself in a passionate activity, something that you truly love what you're doing, you will find that any obstacle you had in yourself that prevented you from getting to the next level will just vanish out of your way, because it becomes a labor of love. It becomes a lifelong experience. And one of the things that's very interesting about a process as complex as filmmaking or digital effects, for that matter, is that because it's such a complex process overall, people tend to get hung up on the mechanics of it, and they become obsessed with the technology, and you have the manufacturers pumping all this new technology and new equipment at you, and new software and new hardware, and it's very easy to get overwhelmed by all of that. And in fact, I've seen many, when I taught a graduate digital and visual effects class, I found many of my students got so hung up on the technology that they forgot completely what they were doing. I mean, they would get hung up on the particular software or a particular technique, a new soft body dynamic or a hard body dynamic, all the new bells and whistles. It's very easy to get lost in that. And when you see Guy's course, the thing that he really, in my personal opinion, the thing that shines is the love and the passion for what the art is of filmmaking. And that's sort of been our goal, is it to instill that type of love for the art of special effects. When I started doing special effects, there was no computers and there wasn't any of this kind of stuff that you could get lost in. So it was very much rubber bands and glue and putting things together and making something. When I had talked to Guy earlier, he had mentioned ILM and Star Wars and their innovations. When you look back at their innovations, they are so innovative because they were working with nothing, and they built things from the ground up, and they were on our long-form class that we give, we start literally from the ground up, from the beginnings of special effects, and sort of take you through, fast-forward you through the century of the beginnings of film and special effects up until today, because once you learn how special effects started and the mechanics, it's a very good analogy is driving a car. When you first learn to drive a car, many people get infatuated with what kind of car I'm driving, and then when you sit behind the wheel finally and you've got all that horsepower in front of you, many people's first reaction was to step on the gas and the car lurches forward and your heart's pounding and
and then it becomes this
helter-skelter kind of coordination of trying to keep the car on the road and at the right speed, and your eyes are going back and forth between the cars next to you, and it's a very hectic thing. But if you practice and practice, as Guy said, and get past that, it becomes second nature. And once it becomes second nature, that's when it becomes fluid. And in filmmaking, as well as in digital and visual effects, one of the things that we try to project to you is, first of all, learning how to see. And it's as true in my class as I believe Guy would attest to in his class. You will watch films differently. You will look at things differently. When you're doing 3D work and you're doing special effects, you'll start to look at the world differently, and you'll start to analyze, well, how would I recreate that rather than just seeing a building? I know I'm covering a lot and rambling.
That's right.
In any particular direction?
Well, we can also have take questions, but actually I love what you're saying because I know we have both filmmakers and we have writers, and when we were – my own business, we work a lot with writers and directors, but on a writer's point of view, I think it's interesting kind of learning what technology is, so that with, a writer, a lot of times it's like, understanding like where they're getting bang for their buck, and to say, oh, okay, I don't really want to include that because it's going to just make my movie too big to produce.
Okay.
Or they go, oh, actually,
you hit upon a great point
that.
There. You hit upon a great point there, and I'm sorry to interject here, but that I don't want to miss this one. Our big philosophy is if you go to many film schools, they're not wrong in what they're telling you. In principle, what they're saying is correct. You'll hear a lot, one room, one person, one camera, one day, strip everything off of your movie. And what I find happens, their philosophy isn't wrong. Movie making is a complex business, and until you get adept at it, a lot of times that is the best way to go. However, I know a lot of people who've completely lost their love of making movies by having this censored and stripped down philosophy pushed on them that you have to remove this exotic location, you have to move this exotic space sequence, you have to remove exactly what you were saying. Is a lot of people feel that as a writer, oh, this is going to be too expensive, no one's going to do this. I'll have to eliminate this scene because it'll be way too expensive or too complicated to shoot. And what, as Guy is here to show you how to make your movie and how to get through the complexities and make it so where you are efficient and masterful at creating a movie, we're here doing the same thing with special effects, saying, hey, wait, don't quite cut that out yet. Let's take a look at it. Let's pull it apart and see with the technology that's available today. There's very few times where I can see something that a new filmmaker that I would say to them, cut it, because it's usually possible.
Which is awesome. And I think, like I said, I think it's important to sort of people sort of really understand sort of what's in that realm, because, budgets are a big consideration, and that when you look at a script, sort of say, what can we do this for? And yet if you go, those things are very doable and can be really done for a price. That makes a big difference.
Right, and with technology the way it is, there's open source software out there that's literally free that you can pull down off the internet. It's free, open source. You can add to it, you can modify it, and you can do truly incredible things. There are a few effects houses out there that work solely open source software. When you add that to the few packages that you can buy for relatively inexpensive in your home computer, it's truly remarkable, truly unbelievable. Done.
Tell me, John, can you give us a couple of examples of the kind of software that you can buy and what it can do? I mean, I know a lot of it has to do, for example, with green screen, being able to put your actors in a green screen environment and then being able to change whatever location you need to change, whether it's a cave or a beach or whatever.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, it's interesting. Part of being at the forefront of this type of technology has a lot to do with keeping abreast as to what's being developed and just sort of looking around, finding the new developers of software. And I'll give you an example. When we were shooting the movie we're producing, One Anunnaki, we didn't have the kind of budget where we could have a real-time green screen previs type of monitoring system, yet we had some very complex green screen and blue screen shots where we really needed to be able to see our plates along with what was being shot at the time. And as it turns out, there was a little development company out of the Soviet or the ex-Soviet Union, Russia, that was working on an animation program, and it was a stop-motion based program which had a feature, and I emailed the guy. We went back and forth a few times, and I said, would it be possible to throw this into it to make it a usable pre-visualization piece of software for us? Within a day, he had sent it back to me all ready to go.
Wow, awesome.
And people really take for granted the amount of software and resources that are available on a free or developmental basis to do phenomenal things. I'll give you another great example. There's a piece of software. A lot of people have these gigantic scenes overlooking a valley or a giant, you know, war scene where you've got a huge expansive environment, let's say, in general. There's a piece of software called TerraGen that was being developed, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe you can still use I think they do have a commercial version, but they also have a personal version, I believe, that's still free. This thing was used by many companies, including the big companies, ILM and others, in doing giant vistas and mountain ranges and big expanses. And this is something you could render on your home computer.
Wow.
A company called Eon Software produces a piece of software called, it was originally Vue Esprit, now it's called Vue Infinite, I believe. I met the guys at one of the first SIGGRAPHs when they had a demo of their first beta or first alpha of the software. I thought it was a great piece of software. I've been using it for a long time, and as it turns out, the last Pirates of the Caribbean used that software for these giant shots. If you go to their site, you can take a look and see. And this is not software that costs bazillions of dollars. This is something that's readily available to most people, and they could be turning out shots like that as well.
Incredible. Tell me, things like adding things to already existing film footage, like, for example, changing a cloud sequence and be able to, you know, have an incredible sky.
Right.
Is that a different kind of software that you're doing with what you're talking about? I'm just trying to figure out how many different things there are available.
Well, there's more things available than you could probably shake a stick at, but the way I try to approach it is very similar the way you try to approach it in your directing and filmmaking seminar. I try to approach it the same way in digital and visual effects, which is have a very succinct methodology for taking your shot that you want to do and then breaking it down into how are we going to make this shot work with the effect we want to add.
Okay.
So as in, like you said, making a film, you can hand out 40 cameras to 40 different people and you'll get 40 different things. I'm very big on sort of the idea that there's never just one way to do an effect.
I got you.
There's always 100 different ways to do it, and none of them are wrong. It's just which works best with what you have available, how much money you have, if you have no money, if you've got no equipment, if you have some equipment. You take all the factors in and you sort of reverse engineer. I always love when people say, are making short films, and people say, well, did you budget it? And I always kind of chuckle at that to myself, because I know, as well as most of them know, that when you're making a short film, many times you're reverse budgeting. You're saying, instead of saying, here's our budget, you sort of start going and eking out of it what you can, and you get a favor from this person and a favor from that person. That wasn't really in the budget, but it becomes part of the budget, if that makes sense.
And regarding visual effects designers, if someone is making a movie that has a number of visual effects in it, is it a matter of hiring that person who is knowledgeable with all the different programs and how to be able to apply them? I mean, it almost becomes almost a new department sort of on a movie. Do you know what I mean?
Right, and that's a great question. And again, I guess that comes back to what level of film you're producing, and do you really have a budget, or are you just determined to make this movie and get it done? One of the things that we have practiced what we preached is in doing a lot of work with schools. You will find some of the most amazingly talented 3D artists, and this is something I tell every filmmaker that comes to me saying, hey, how do I do this? I'm not going to be able to do this. I don't have the money to go hire an effects company. They're going to charge me an arm and a leg to do this effect. I say, go to your effects, your animation and effects and art schools. There are young people there who are doing animation, digital effects work that will blow your mind.
Wow, that's a great idea.
And to tell them that they're getting their first real credit as a digital effects supervisor, they'll bring in five of their friends, and you'll have the ability to do more than you ever dreamed you could possibly do.
Great idea. That's great. You know, it's amazing, because about 10, 15 years ago, you wouldn't even think about bringing a visual effects designer on, because it just wasn't part of a ball game. Do you know what I mean?
It wasn't there.
It's really, truly cutting-edge stuff. Tell me, from a seminar that you're bringing on the four weekends, I know you in about 7 hours, you're gonna fulfill amazing amount of material. But can you give me some idea? You were talking about hitting upon 2D and 3D, and doing some in-camera effects that are possible these days.
Right, and basically what we try to do in our full-blown 2-day seminar, which is a much longer seminar, similar in length to yours. We actually literally start from the beginning, like I said, of film history, and really bring people up to speed in the first couple of hours on being able to visually. It's really literally learning to see. We watch movies all the time. We watch things in nature all the time when we're driving around, but do we really see them? Are we really looking at them? And I remember the first time someone showed me. I think it was like one of the Terminator movies, and they showed me, they before they showed it to me, they said, do you remember the scene when this happens? He walks in and shoots this person, and he said, describe it to me, and I described it in vivid detail. When he showed it to me, it was nothing like I saw it.
Wow.
And you find that to be the case a lot, because it's all in learning to see what you're actually doing, and then learning to sort of process that. And I find that in my career, you take a lot of seminars and classes, and anything that pops up, you're always looking for – it's always a learning process throughout your entire career. But every once in a while, you get one of those little nuggets of gold, those little nuggets of information, which your class is full of. And I'm telling everybody out here that from a person who's had a lot of experience in doing this and then taking his guy's class, it's just – you're exhausted. You've got so much.
Tell me, John,
I try to put that in mind as well, where we sort of strip out all of the ancillary material that you, the stuff that you hear over and over and over again in most of the material you hear, and really get down to how do I take this scene, how do I take it apart, and how do I make exactly what it is I envision in my head.
Before Philippa opens up for questions, John, maybe you could talk about a couple of simple programs by name, even, because I have a feeling there's a lot of people out there who would love to be able to go out and get one or two of us programs and be able to work with them, what are some of the basic programs that somebody starting out should, you know, get and work with?
Okay, well, you have two categories, basically, which would be the ones you're going out to buy, the paid-for versions, and then there's the open source or free versions of software.
All right.
The number one, hands down, probably is Photoshop. Photoshop is pretty much the industry standard in photo manipulation, retouching. It's sort of your workhorse for doing special effects.
All right.
In general, there's the open source version of Photoshop, which is called GIMP. And it's an acronym for the General Image Manipulation Program or something like that. And that's available. As a matter of fact, in our seminars, I give a disc that has basically the links to download.
Oh, great.
Dozens and dozens and dozens of both open source as well as full running trial versions of software. They'll be getting all of this. You know, and but we can put links to that as well. The next would be some sort of compositing software. After Effects is a great choice. People on Macs like Shake. There's so many different pieces of software. One of the things that I've been affiliated with a few software companies because, for example, NewTek, I taught at a Lightwave-based school. So, but I'm very much of the mentality of teaching the concept and not getting so focused on the software. Because if you work for one company and then you go work for another company, they may use a different piece of software.
Got it.
It's like, Guy, it's very similar to people that get hooked on one camera.
That camera
might be good for that shot, but you may need to use this other kind of camera for this other shot. And it's a tool, and you should know how to use the tool regardless.
Just to give an idea, if someone wanted to actually purchase After Effects, do you know what it cost?
If you're purchasing it and you're, I really don't know what the latest price is because I think the latest upgrade we got was in the entire production bundle.
Uh-huh.
It's probably a few hundred dollars.
I see. Okay. Definitely doable.
It's probably a few hundred dollars but then again, if you're a student, you can always get through some of the student software companies half price many times. And the nicest thing is you can download full working versions for free just to start playing around with them.
Oh, I see. Like on a trial basis?
Yeah, I don't know. Different ones have different deals, but some are 30-day trials and whatnot.
That sounds great. That sounds really cool. Tell me, John, regarding any other kind of effects going, can you talk a little bit about there's some people out there who might not know the difference between like a 2D and a 3D effect. Can you talk about that real quick?
Sure, sure. I'll jump back and blend this in to what you were asking me before. Because we don't have as much time as we do in our normal course, we sort of pare this down a little bit, and it's a little bit of a different thing because I'm gearing this a little more towards filmmakers who may not know much about special effects.
Right.
And what we do is, the first thing I do is break down exactly what effects are and what types of effects they are. There's a very simple analogy that I use. I have a few of these little golden rules that sort of help you to image them in your head and know how do I get this, how do I get that. You start off with in-camera effects, such as, and these are the type of effects that we go through in our history portion of our full-blown seminar, and that's the original effects that were done: stop motion, over cranking and under cranking a camera, forced perspective, model miniatures, practical effects, explosions, squibs, filters on a camera, and then we can go into image processing, which we don't do we kind of skim over that now because most image processing we do in the digital side, as opposed to the analog side, if you will. However, there's still some that are very valid, using 50% mirrors, the Pepper's Ghost type of effects. in-camera double exposure. There's a lot of effects that can actually be done with no software, no special, software or computers
and
at
all.
Can
you cover all that?
I don't know how much of it we're going to get to cover, but we are going to cover quite a bit of it because a lot of people want to know how to do certain things and don't want to even touch a computer. Once we jump to the computer, though, then we get into the area. We kind of divide it into the categories of 2D effects, 3D effects, and 2.5D effects. And to kind of give you a brief summary, 2D effects will be anything of a planar nature, meaning standard compositing, where you want to put a background behind somebody. You have a person who's supposed to be standing on a beach in Hawaii, but you're shooting in Minneapolis in your house. You put a blue screen or a green screen behind them, and then you put a plate or an image behind them. That would constitute a 2D effect.
Okay.
There are more than that type of 2D effects, though. You have paint type of effects, which would be Star Wars, of course, made very popular the lightsaber effects, and there's many 2D effects we do digitally, such as digital bullet hits, digital gunfire, digital squibs, digital explosions. There's many even digital particle systems that fake 3D but are actually 2D.
I see.
From there, we jump into 3D effects, which are full-blown 3D. The limitation behind 2D is if you picture holding up a piece of paper in front of you and that being your background, if you turn to the side of it, you start losing the effect.
Okay.
3D adds the dimension of depth where now you can actually move around within your environment. Now you can actually add add 3D shadows into your environment and from the object to the environment. And then from there we go into 2.5D and the more cutting edge, which are sort of a combination of both. But the way I like to say it is, and a lot of people kind of have a little problem with this when I first say this, but film as a medium is an illusion to begin with. There really is no motion. It's a series of, when you learn the theory of persistence of vision, you learn that one image replacing another in a certain period of time gives the illusion to the brain of motion. So the fact that a movie is moving to begin with is an illusion and a cheat. So once you accept that and take that to heart, there is no cheating. Whatever looks good on camera and it works, works. So there's a lot of things, and again, people get lost in the technology, and I try to really steer people away from that, steer people towards the image and away from the technology. And I'll give you a great example. My first day of my first class of the graduate class I taught, for my previous class I taught, I had my first assignment to the students was, I want you to give me however you want to do it. We photographed some kids sitting at a desk, and I said, I want them to be in a library. And without a doubt, 95% of them, I believe, started modeling books, one after another. Some were great at it, some were not so great at it. Within the first hour or so, I asked to see everybody's work and asked if everyone was done yet. And, of course, they'd only modeled, a few dozen books apiece, and maybe some of the wall bookshelves. And then I held up one of my students who was from a previous class, and I said, are you done? And he said, oh, yeah, I'm finished. And he showed him the picture, and they said, how on earth did you do that?
Wow.
He had a picture of a library wall, and he put it behind the person who was sitting at the desk.
Oh, I see.
So, and everybody said, but that's cheating. He didn't model the books. And I said, I never said you had to model the books. I said you had to get the person in a library.
That's just
sort of a great indicator of how people get lost and waste a lot of time and money in the technology when it's not necessary. And I think you can attest to this, Guy. There's so many people who get hung up on the intricacies of a camera and lighting and what they need. They need generators and they need this and they need that, and they have all this equipment, and they may make a really bad image.
Right.
And it's not really – you can send somebody who knows what they're doing out with the cheapest of cameras and a couple of foam boards, and they're going to come out with a beautiful image.
Right.
So it's really more of what you know, and that's one thing I love about your course is that you really get down to the heart of it and really give people exactly what they need to go out there with a camera and start shooting.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we hope to do.
to be really specific, let's sort of ground the dates. You guys are on your full tour. It's
all right.
Fort Lauderdale. You've got that coming weekend after next. So if you guys are out there in the southeastern United States, it's going to be the place to be. It's going to be October 12th and 14th. And then coming to Chicago, October 19th and 21st. Los Angeles here November 2nd to 4th. And New York is November 9th through 11th. So that's a really it's a pretty intense schedule. But, I mean, you're really kind of going to where people are kind of across the country. So not everywhere they are. But, I mean, it definitely gives people options if it's a place near you to you know, these are a great place to be. And it's a very reasonable. I mean, speak about, you know, what these visual effects things cost. I mean, the cost of going. I mean, I went to USC Film School, and I took my special effects course there, which was fantastic and phenomenal. And obviously, all my filmmaking stuff, but my stuff at the time, that was like 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago, you know, I was paying $554 a credit.
Sure.
And so what you guys get I always remember the people telling me, like, why to go to film school, especially for me. I was always interested in the business and the deal making side of kind of came up through the representation side of the business. But it's all about, you know, it's about knowledge, about experience, but it's also about relationships, because when you're talking about, like, how much is available to you, it's also people, just the fact that you've built this community and you have these sort of intense opportunities to sort of meet people and then you can call on, and that they help provide you the inroads and the resources to get what it is that you need and to put your projects together.
Exactly.
And get them through proper channels. So I think that, and you guys, I mean, like I would say, I think the pricing for this really can't be beat for the value that you guys are offering.
Well, we try to make it available to everybody who's really interested in learning filmmaking and learning visual effects. And we do give a special combo price if people are interested in taking both seminars. And I don't know any other seminars out there that give both courses in the same weekend. So in 3 days, you can get done with an amazing amount of knowledge.
No, that's fantastic. And I've through putting together some of these calls, I've had the privilege of meeting and getting to know some of your previous students, and they've all just raved about the opportunities and the doors that's opened up for them and just how much they learned and all the cool stuff they're up to now. So that's really fun to sort of hear that. And then just a kind of a plug for Chris Oates and $1 Million Screenwriting, and Hollywood by Phone has also kind of come in to add an extra kicker to kind of match the value that you guys are offering by offering, because with the side of it that it's, you know, continuing to open doors to Hollywood and provide access, calls like these. I'm doing, you know, weekly calls with there, and Action Cut was a recent sponsor there. So in exchange for, you know, he has offered, so anybody who's signing up for these weekends gets a 6 months of Hollywood by Phone, which is really, really cool. And that's over, I think it's $275 value. So that, you know, kind of comes with, by registering for these now, that's part of the package, which I think.
Yeah, I'm very grateful, Chris, for offering that bonus for people who sign up for our seminars. Again, his is a weekly phone call with industry folks, right?
Yeah, it's everybody across working Hollywood. So it's writers, directors, actor. I think we actually have more like development executives at actor companies, and for example, like Jason Blumenthal, who produced Pursuit of Happiness and The Weatherman, and Alex and Emma, and they have a deal. The Escape Artist has their deal over at Sony. He's one of our guests coming up. Michael Lent, who wrote the book Breakfast with Sharks, and is a screenwriter and has a book coming out through Simon & Schuster, is one of our guests, and lots of agents and managers and various development executives, from sort of Alec LaSalle's company to Intrepid Pictures that has their deal over at Universal to. It's working Hollywood, and it just kind of gives people access to query, ask some questions, because it's an intimate call and Q&A, which we're going to start here in a minute. So it's a great opportunity for people to really, hear the front lines of, like, what Hollywood's looking for, what's working, and get, because I always think about working in Hollywood, it's really about working with a community of people who know each other.
Absolutely.
And so it's about, where do you start? You just kind of start wherever you are and kind of open yourself up. And I think that's, like, going to these kind of, and I can't tell you how many people, I mean, even over the years, people we've come to represent and do business with or who buy projects from us, it really is about that sort of repeated interaction with people. But you kind of, once you find, have that first connection, I can't tell you how many people I've met at various seminars that I've either stopped in as a guest speaker or I've taken or I've been invited to in various ways. And then you see them again and suddenly, you know, there's that connection there. And then those relationships just unfold and lead you in all sorts of really cool places. So I'm, yeah, just like I said, really huge fan of you guys. Now I'd love to turn it over to questions if that works for you guys.
Sure.
We definitely, just so you guys on the line here know, it's 5-star. Raises your hand, and then I can call on you. And I know we had a question. Let's see. I'm on, my screen is being slow here. But anyways, it's 5-star to ask questions. So there we go. Okay, here we go. And 917, ending in 8427. And hold on, you're not muted. Not muting you. There we go. Try it now. 917, ending in 8427.
Hello? Anybody there? 917 area code? Anybody there? Let's try another one.
Yeah, let me try another one. Hold on. Let's see. Now, this one is... I'm muting them on the back end, but it's everybody's kind of grayed out, so it doesn't. Bear with me a second. And the other one I was going to say is a calling card coming in at 9999. So I think that's a calling card. But I think they're still. Sorry, guys. I'm gonna throw you on another topic because my my back end of the computer here has decided to be very slow. All right, so I'm going to just throw you guys onto another question. Now, bringing this back, so you guys have talked to on a lot about technology and obviously, you know, not getting caught up in the mechanics of it. But bringing it back to Guy and like, how do you use all of that now, sort of, you know, with story and filmmaking and emotion? Because I think that kind of putting that together as a director, because and obviously you guys also like in a film. They're very project-based. So, you know, how the department works, and you talked about the director sort of leading the army. And so, like, how do you guys work together as professionals?
Well, again, the great part about what's going on is that you can almost do anything that you want to do. And the world of visual effects has, you know, come down so much in price and in being able to do almost anything that you want, that you can actually write screenplays that have almost anything that you want, even doing a television show, which is usually a pretty... tight budget week in and week out, and they do try to stay on budget as much as they can. You'd be amazed about all the new special effects that are actually put in there, and from location to explosions to all sorts of things like that. When I did my last picture, for example, the Children of a Corn, there was a whole building that was supposed to be on fire at the end. And obviously, we rented this building and took out the windows and did some painting around the windows that looked like burn, but there was no flames whatsoever. And all of that, a whole entire building that was on fire, was put in by the special effects team, and the rest is done with sound. And when you look at it, you know, complete with smoke and crackling sounds and all everything else that you have in a fire and things breaking, timber weight breaking inside and falling, all of that is put in by the sound team. And when you work with the different departments in being able to coordinate something like that, here we are in an empty building that we had. The building was real, but the fire wasn't. And at the end of it, it's the end of a picture. It's extremely effective because all of these amazing effects were done where the kind of ghost-like figures were inside the fire of the Children of a Corn, which were burning away and being released, so to speak. So here we're adding not only fire to a building, but we were also adding forms and faces that were floating inside the flames. And it was an amazing, amazing finish to the picture. And that movie cost less than $2 million. And I believe the entire building effects at the end cost less than $10,000 to do. So, and we never had, you know, obviously we didn't have to burn anything to make it happen. And that's what's incredible about special effects, that you can do anything that you basically want. John, do you want to follow up a little on that?
Sure. You know, that's becoming more and more the trend, actually, is not only the effects that many of the effects you see in the movies you go see or the TV shows you see, you don't even realize are effects anymore.
Right.
Because the majority of effects, I would say, in my opinion, that are done are not flashy effects. They're small effects that used to take people lots of time to try to do, and now they're just sort of standardized things. You want a new location, you don't have to go running out scouting locations. You can just shoot on a back lot and put in whatever digital matte painting you want of whatever city or landscape you want. That's sort of becoming, as technology keeps getting cheaper and cheaper, and another thing that is always sort of a fine line and argument point between filmmakers, let's just use the overall catchphrase, is that digital filmmaking makes it so inexpensive and so easy that if you're a filmmaker, which I'm guessing everyone is here, you have no excuse to not be filming, to not being a filmmaker. It used to be shooting film is a beautiful medium for sure. It's a very very slow feedback process where you shoot, you take your film, you wait till it's developed, you look at it. If it's not exactly how you want it, you have it timed, and it's a back and forth and back and forth. It's a lot more like sculpting, where shooting on digital is much more like having a statue inside of a piece of clay and just exploding it open. I mean, it's right there. It's immediate. You know whether you have your shot or you don't have your shot, and you move on. And it makes it does it take some of the elegance out of the process? I would say probably it's possible that you lose some of the aesthetic in the time it takes, and people tend to rush things a little more in the digital process. However, when used correctly, and if you light the same way and pay the same attention to shooting on a digital format that you would with a film format, you'll find that you have a very compelling image. I mean, the thing that people make the biggest mistakes on, I believe, are really in not treating digital like film. They try to rush it. They try to do it without taking so much care. I remember the first set I went on where I didn't see a light meter being used, and I said, that's kind of like a thing you sort of get used to when you shoot film, you know. And but even shooting digital, we still take light readings, and that's one of those things that's sort of a necessary thing to keep in the first question that was asked here, and to be becoming masterful at what you're doing is really taking the time to treat your small production like a big production.
And to answer your question, Philippa, the last few features and the last few TV shows I did, for the first time we had a visual effects department, which we never did about 10, 15 years ago. And there's a supervisor and his team, and you know, you sit down and you talk to them about all the special effects that you're going to need in every scene, and they start working and designing, and you work with them just like you work with a wardrobe department or a prop department or any other department. It's become just part of a filmmaking business to have a visual effects department.
Great. Now, and speaking of effects and technology, for some reason it was saying my system had timed out, and so I reset it. So I'm trying to. I've got a few more than a few questions here. So
let's do it.
So let me try. Come back to 917. It looks like I've unmuted them. So chime in. It's ending in 8427. And if not them, I've also got a 760 ending in 4185. The problem is if they're speaking, it's graying out my ability to. I'm trying to actually unmute everybody for a sec. Actually, I'm going to try it on my phone, so one sec. Give me one second here. Okay, let's try this. It might be a little better.
Hello?
If you guys are...
That's it.
I kind of unmuted the line, but that, if you're in a loud place, you can self-mute yourself by 4-star. But I'm going to try it again. Let's try...
Hello?
917? Hey.
Hello?
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
You can hear me?
Yes.
You can hear me?
We can hear you.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I wasn't sure if it was me or someone else that was responding. I listened to
the other gentleman. We'll get to him in a second. Let's start with you. Question.
Well, I heard the other gentleman say there really is no excuse with the advent of technology making things cheaper to not go out and film. I'd like to know his recommendations as to what sort of a digital camera we should be purchasing. And second, I heard the dates of when they're going to be in town, but not any contact information on how to go about signing up for these courses.
ActionCut.com.
Oh, okay.
ActionCut.
Yeah, if you go to the website, you'll find out the topics for both the ActionCut seminar and the Visual Effects seminar. And there's a registration page. It's secured, and that's how everybody's signing up through the ActionCut.com website. John, you want to talk about digital cameras?
Sure, sure. My recommendation is, number one, don't kill yourself on budget. If use whatever you can afford and without making it a burden on yourself. Obviously, the better camera you get, the better image you'll get to a degree, especially when it comes to special effects work. The things you're mainly looking for, though, you want a three-chip camera instead of a one-chip camera, especially if you're going to be doing any kind of effects work. That's not to rule out a one-chip camera. There are plenty of, as a matter of fact, I just set up a studio for a school here locally that wanted to do some tests on blue screen and green screen work, and they just didn't have the budget for a really, you know, a prosumer camera or anything. So they went with a upper grade consumer three chip digital camera, and honestly, it looked beautiful. You know, it's really more, a lot of it is more of lighting and light control than it is. You can make a small camera look terrible, and you can make it also look great. If you shoot, most people put the little light that they sit right up on top of the camera, and they turn that on, and they wonder why their image doesn't look very good, and it looks more like a mugshot than a cinematic image, is because that's not the way you shoot a cinematic image. The way you shoot a cinematic image is to make sure that your lighting is adequate and that you have some attractive lighting on your subject, and you may have some background lighting and a little splash of color to fancy it up a little bit. If you do that with even the cheapest of cameras, you're going to get 100% better, I even say 1,000% better image than with your standard camera, even if it's just your couple hundred dollar, you know, mini DV camera.
Okay.
The biggest one that you want to look for, if you're planning on doing special effects with it, though, you want to try to get a three-chip camera, which are also, at this point, relatively inexpensive. I've seen one of the normal brands, Panasonic or Sony, three-chip for in the $300 to $500 range for a three-chip camera. The other thing I would suggest, too, is just starting out and you're not doing super big production type of thing, you know, again, people get lost in technology. HD is the new catchphrase. High definition is the new buzzword. It's not always for you. If you're just creating, if you're getting started, you don't need high def image. High definition image, in addition to having a high resolution, also taxes your computer system a lot more, making rendering times outrageous, making any type of compositing rendering you're doing, any kind of special effects you're going to do to it, you're going to find your system's going to crawl to a stop pretty much, trying to render out high def images. And the truth is, the image won't look much different to the average person. If you're going to use it to then broadcast or go to film, excuse me, then you may want to look into HD. But I wouldn't get so concerned if you're just starting out about the buzzword. It's more important, as Guy said, to actually be there and actually do it, shoot it, because you're going to get the experience of seeing what to do, what not to do, what things go wrong, what shots look better, what things are more dramatic, whether you're using a small camera or a big camera.
Thank you.
I didn't know they were down to about $300 to $500 now, the three chips. It's really great.
Yeah.
Panasonic and Sony does them as well?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the camera we picked up was a Panasonic, a couple of Panasonics, and they were, I think, 400 and change.
Oh, great.
Right, now another gentleman was chiming in earlier.
Yeah, that was me, Christian. Can you hear?
Hello?
Hello?
Christian?
Yeah.
Where are you from, Christian?
Brooklyn, actually, New York.
Okay, welcome.
Thanks. I'm around. I had a pretty simple question. I've been, you know, of course everyone's looking at specialist green screen. I kind of been, you know, wondering what the for adding the green screen, you know, I kind of assume that it's more of a natural color thing, but...
I'm sorry, you're like breaking up. I couldn't hear the whole question.
Basically, the difference between blue screen and green screen, is it a 2D, 3D thing, or is it a natural color?
Okay, actually, that's a great question. That's one of the most common questions probably asked. There's a couple answers to that question. The first answer to the question is that you basically want a color that's not in the scene you're shooting. So if someone's dressed in green camouflage clothing and green face paint and a green hat, green background would not distinguish them very much from that, so making a key harder to pull, making them harder to extract. What you're trying to do is you're trying to tell the software, here's a color that's not in what I want. Remove
right.
this. So if you have – a lot of times what dictates what color you'll use is what color – is the subject you're doing. If you're shooting a person in blue jeans, you obviously, everybody's seen it one time or another, the weatherman who forgets and gets a tie with a blue stripe in it against his blue screen and you see through him. You don't want that color in a color that you're doing. Now, is that to say that you can't use other colors? Absolutely not, and in fact, we do. We shoot black screen, we shoot white screen. In some circumstances, we have red and blue, blue and green, you'll shoot red screen or orange screen. So it's green. The second answer is that the CCDs in a digital camera green. The green channel of a CCD camera has the most luminance, so it tends to be an easier color to pull from digital cameras. The original blue color that was used for film key pulling was originally chosen as blue because it was the farthest from a natural skin tone. There's not much blue in skin tone. So they chose that as the color, and then they calibrated a lot of the software to blue or green. Is that to say you can't use another color? Absolutely not. In fact, if you're shooting we typically will shoot lots of special effects practical elements, which is something we go over. You want to shoot fog that you want to later composite onto your scene. You shoot it against the black screen so it's easy to screen over onto your final image. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I was just curious. I kind of figured it was a coloring scheme in terms of, you know, what you don't want to take out.
Exactly. That's the majority, and that's why it becomes critical that when you're lighting your green screen, that you want it to be a very even lighting and you want the screen to not have lots of wrinkles or bumps, because the software doesn't know the difference that it's green. All it sees is if it sees a shaded part, it knows that's a different color.
Perfect. We had a couple people chime in here, and I wasn't sure what error code, so I'm just going to get some of the other ones out. 610.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes,
hey.
Dan, how are you?
Hey, Guy, this is Richard from out near Philadelphia.
How you doing, Richard?
Okay. By the way, you were excellent last time I called in, and just wanted to follow up on something. I was the one who asked about writing for television, which I know is a bit of a tangent here, but you've got so much background in that. Can I run one more by you?
All right.
You said something about write to the story editor. Don't send it to the top guy if you've got.
No, what I said was don't send it to the top guys at the networks, where you go to pitch the story.
Okay.
What you should do is, because these people, you know, when you set up a meeting with one of the networks, you're not going to meet the top guy if they don't know you. And
right.
If you're a complete stranger, probably the third assistant down is probably going to take the meeting, and his entire job is to say no.
Right, right.
So the best thing to do if you want to create a television show is to find somebody who's done something in the similar genre, whether it's a sitcom
right.
or an action show or a police show or a medical show,
right.
and find out somebody who's been successful in the past doing that kind of show.
Understood.
And then you get to that guy. That guy has a company,
right.
and you've got to get to him. And if he likes the project, then you team up with him and you both go together to the top guys of the networks, because that's who he sees. He sees the top guys who say yes.
If you just have a, let's say, an episode that you've written, that one goes to the story editor. Did I catch that right?
An episode of an ongoing show?
Right, an ongoing show. You want
yeah,
to
that would
break
go
it.
To the story editor of that show or any of the producers of that show, because all the producers on TV shows are also writers, and you know they used to be assistant editors and then got bumped up the following year when the show got picked up. So any of the producers, as opposed to the executive producer or the showrunner, who's a really tough guy to see, but any of the producers or the story editors are the right guys to send a spec script on a TV show.
And Guy, one more thing.
Yeah.
If you get rejected, let's say, by, like, story editor sends it back, says, listen, kid, you don't have an agent and we don't need this. Is there any problem in repackaging that and sending it to one of the producers?
Well, it's a tough question because a lot of these guys won't take a look at anything that doesn't come through representation because of legal reasons.
Right.
If your show is about, you know, a clown, and the next year somebody comes up without even having seen your script of doing a clown show,
right.
all of a sudden you can sue them and say, well, you read my script last year and you ripped off my story.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem with sending things cold to story editors or to producers is not great.
Yeah, no, this is one of the reasons I was going to say the idea of community and people being vetted. I mean, this is actually very much what I speak on and very much what we do day to day is packaging those kind of things, and that's very much within our world. And that's actually one of the reasons what Chris and what he's doing with Hollywood by Phone. It's like a lot of the guests that are on there are, you know, people across film and television, and also, you know, so I don't know if you're part of that or, and that's, you know, are you planning on being at the Action Cut in New York?
I'm part of Chris's
okay.
Project. And,
great. So you're already, I know that he's got some more than a few TV people kind of lined up and, you know, coming down that way. So it's a great resource. And, you know, so people who are kind of on the in the Action Cut kind of get that as well. So
I mean, you almost need an agent to be able to hand something to a story editor or a producer, and then they will read it. It's really hard to do it by sending it cold. As far as a story editor, if he doesn't like the idea, even if you are represented by an agent, to repackage the story and send it to a producer, probably a waste of time. You know, I mean, I don't know what repackaging means. If it's a story about whatever it is,
right.
what are you going to do? You know, you're going to change the story. If you're going to change the story, now you have a completely different screenplay and a completely different spec script that you could send again to the story editor. I don't understand changing it and sending it to the producer. But remember, those guys are in the same office, and they work together every day. And, you know, if your name comes up again on a piece of paper and the guy says, did you read this thing? And he says, yeah. And, you know, it gets really – if you get turned down, I suggest you try another whole show.
I get it. And, Guy, if you have no agent, is it still worth a shot sending it in cold to the story editor?
It is, but it's going to be a tough road because, again, most of them won't want to read it because they'll be afraid of any legal repercussions on that particular story. Should they come up with it on their own, or if you see it next year, you know, you might be able to sue them for ripping you off, which is one of the problems. You really do need an agent. If you're going to approach people who are, like, you know, showrunners and executive producers or their companies or their staff, the only way you're going to get to a place where somebody can really read it and really give an opinion is through an agent or a manager. You really got to have representation. And I highly recommend you do that before you approach it. But once you do that, and depending on what the genre is of your show, that agent or manager will be able to get it to that particular showrunner and see what happens. Because if they like it, then you and them can create that show and go to the network and sell it.
Understood. Hey, thank you.
All righty.
Excellent. So I think that any other questions? We've got a lot of people online. We're always kind of quiet. So it's 5-star. I think we can take another question or two, and then we can wrap it up. You know, thank you guys so much for being here. I've got a question 603.
Yeah, this is Gene Langless.
Hi, Steve. Where are you from?
We're in New Hampshire, Gene and Paul.
Oh, great.
We're brothers and screenwriters.
Good
we had
for
a
you.
Question actually about the special effects budgeting side of things. Whenever we're talking with producers and as they start getting interested in all, the inevitable question comes up, what sort of budget are we talking about? To which we usually have no answer at all. So is there any sort of way that writers can even, can you suggest any resources that we could go to or we could start ballparking budgets for things that we write to give an answer to these people? Or
John, is there anything that could help these guys out regarding the pricing of special effects or how to go about it?
You know what? It's a great question and probably the toughest question to answer because it really depends on number one, what it is that you're quoting. I think I mentioned at the very beginning of this call, there's 100 different ways to do any given special effect. It's sort of like going in to buy a car. You can go in and say, I want a car. How much is it going to cost me?
Right.
Well, are you buying a low-end car or are you buying the Rolls-Royce of cars? You know, effects houses are sort of in some ways notorious for the three-word rule, you know, fast, cheap, good. Pick
yeah.
two. Giving numbers off the top are really, really very difficult. And in fact, part of the reason why a lot of effects houses have such a hard time these days is because what a lot of quoting a job might entail, and if you keep up to date with the effects houses, especially in your neck of the woods, Guy, what happens a lot of times is effects companies go out of business because they spend so much time and money R&Ding projects just to give a quote, just to try to get the job.
Right.
They'll go in and they'll already be into it for a couple of months and, you know, however much man hours that cost them just to show the movie company what it is that they can do. And the movie company says, you know what, we don't really want that effect. Well, now you're completely out. So my best recommendation to you is to know what effect you're looking for, first of all, and then to bring on maybe somebody as even a bring somebody in as like a consultant for that's familiar with the process. If you're not, to tell you, well, this is the kind of company you would want to do this.
But yeah, I mean, usually it's not even that far. I mean, it's just like networking with a producer at a party and talking about our material, and he says, hey, is this something that can we usually do things in the $5 million range? Is it
right.
can be done for that? How are we supposed to, how is a writer supposed to know? They seem to always
let me jump on that because actually a lot of people ask me that question. As a writer, I don't worry about things like that. I just write with the story that I want, and I don't worry about how much it's going to cost. I don't think it's the job of a writer to also be a production manager and be able to break down any screenplay with or without special effects and come up with a number. Now, it depends generally what you're trying to do. If you're trying to do a $500,000 movie and you're kind of writing very few locations, few characters, not big scenes or expensive scenes or crowd scenes, and you want to keep it at that, that's about as much as you can do as a writer. And you can tell somebody, you know, we need about $500,000 to do this. When the time comes to do it, you're not going to be in charge anyway of a budget. There's a production manager that comes aboard, and that person is much more experienced in how much things cost. And if it's only $500,000, you're probably going to have to go to the low end of effects when you need them.
But to be honest with you,
I don't worry about effects when I write, and I don't worry about budgets when I write. And if I have some idea of what the budget's going to be, $1 million, $2 million, $10 million, that's my quote. And I don't let people throw me off on top of that, whether I meet them at a party or not. If they're telling me they're looking for $5 million project, and I think mine can be done for about that much. On a general level, then, you know, I tell them I do have something for them, and then it doesn't get further than that. I don't think writers need to know budgetary items, if you know what I mean, and I wouldn't let it throw you.
All right, sounds good. Question.
Sorry?
Somewhat of a trick question, because if...
That's what I'm starting to think, if that's...
it's somewhat of a trick question, because if you have, let's just say in your head you've ballparked it because you've got an investor who's ready to do it for $3 million is what your budget is for your movie. If you pick a top-rated name for your headliner, the majority of your budget is going to them.
Right.
Right.
If you have no names in your movie, well, then you actually have a lot more to do special effects, perhaps. So most of the time, in an effects company, someone will walk in and say, "This is what we have. Can you do this?" Mm. And if we say either yes, we can do it, we do it. If we say no, what can we pare down to make it so we can do it for this one? So in a lot of cases, it's more reverse engineering what you have left over for the effects budget than it is actually how much it's going to cost.
Introducing the first smartphone that really rocks. The new.
Sorry about effects. I'm getting a sound effect here.
Oh, yeah. What is that?
Where's that coming from? We are the party line?
We're hungry. Can you phone in with a bowl of chips?
I just needed everybody out, including our...
any other questions that you can isolate?
I think that kind of about wraps it up, guys. Thank you so much for being here. I think we're kind of hitting the mark. But, guys, it's all actioncut.com. Check it out. There's so many great resources on that site that you have for people, and it's just it's amazing what you put together with the competition. Obviously, it's really exciting kind of what you guys are doing together with your fall tour, so I really... hope people come out and join you guys for that, because I know just what incredible value people get, and obviously we've heard so many testimonials to that on these previous calls. So I just really thank everybody. Thank you guys so much for being part of this.
Thank you, and thank you. Thanks, everybody, for being on, and thank you, John.
Thank you guys, too.
John, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
You're very welcome. Pleasure.
Take care, everyone.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take care. All right. Bye, guys.